For CertSecurity.com, I'm Rob Westervelt. You're listening to Security Wire Weekly for February 14th, 2007. In this edition, we'll talk to Yankee Group analyst Andrew Jaquith to get his thoughts on what he saw at RSA Conference 2007. Andrew talks about his new book called Security Metrics, Replacing Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt. Also this week, Microsoft patches 12 security holes, including some zero-day flaws, and also some mobile carriers say that mobile malware is on the rise. Microsoft on Tuesday issued 12 security bulletins patching flaws in Word, Office, Internet Explorer, and Microsoft Data Access components. Six bulletins address critical vulnerabilities. With me on the line is CertSecurity.com's senior news writer, Bill Brenner. Bill, what was among the most serious vulnerabilities that Microsoft patched?
Well, according to some of the security experts I've talked to, the most serious was some issues fixed in their MS-07-010 bulletin, which specifically deals with the Microsoft Malware Protection Engine and the way that it parses PDF files. Security experts are particularly worried about this one because this engine is always scanning in the background in real time, and there's no user interaction required for an exploit to be successful, whereas some of the other flaws that were fixed, which were previously attacked zero-day flaws in Word and in Microsoft Office, those issues do require user interaction, that the user visits a malicious site or clicks on a malicious attachment. So priority one for IT professionals is to apply the MS-07-010 fix.
Okay, thanks, Bill. You can view the full report at certsecurity.com/news. In other news, a recent survey of more than 200 mobile operators revealed that many had been hit by mobile device infections. The study was conducted by Informa Telecoms and Media on behalf of McAfee. According to the study, the number of mobile security incidents in 2006 was more than five times as high as 2005. Customer satisfaction has been a casualty of the increased infections. About 30% of those surveyed said subscriber satisfaction had suffered more than any other factor. The second biggest side effect was the quality of network performance. Next, my interview with Yankee Group analyst Andrew Jaquith, but first, this message.
So you're looking for good reference books on information security, but it's so painful trying to figure out which ones are worth reading. And you're sick and tired of spending time on all those tedious e-com websites trying to sift through all of those anonymous user reviews, right? Well, here's a word of advice. Check out CertSecurity.com's Information Security Bookshelf. CertSecurity.com has compiled an impressive selection of reference book excerpts from leading information security experts, including Ira Winkler, Gary McGraw, Kevin Mitnick, Joel Dubin, and many more. And if you want more than an excerpt, you can download a full chapter for free. Check it out today at CertSecurity.com/bookshelf. That's CertSecurity.com/bookshelf.
And we're back. Joining me today is Yankee Group analyst Andrew Jaquith. Andrew is the program manager for Yankee Group's Enabling Technologies Enterprise Group. His research focuses on security management, risk management, and a packaged and custom web-based applications. He has over 15 years of IT experience, and he's also the author of a forthcoming book from Pearson Addison Wesley called Security Metrics, Replacing Fear, Uncertainty, and Doubt. Andrew, welcome to the program.
My pleasure.
Why don't you talk a little bit about some of the major themes that you saw at RSA?
I think we saw a little less of compliance than last year, and I think that's good for everybody because when you glue compliance into your product literature for everything you sell and everybody's doing the same thing, it kind of floods, you know, it kind of has a dilution effect. It kind of cheapens what you do. So I think people were a little more back to basics this year, a little more upfront about what they were doing and what they were not doing. And I thought that was good. I mean, just from a product standpoint, some of the highlights that I thought were, we certainly saw, you know, some of the perennials. We saw plenty of antivirus products. We saw plenty of mail gateway UTM kind of devices. We certainly saw plenty of authentication tokens and a lot of new wrinkles on those. I thought one of the areas that I thought was interesting this year was we saw more little things, you know, little tiny, you know, either USB devices or little security appliances, you know, that I think represented kind of a next, you know, incremental step in security, more disposable security. Security on a stick is something that we refer to this trend as, and I think it's something that was that you certainly saw in evidence here at RSA.
Because that would be something that end users use at...
Yeah. So, I mean, tools like CoolSpan, which is essentially like a VPN device, or Yagi, which is an appliance on a stick, essentially. Red Cannon would be another example. I mean, these are all things that fit that small form factor, but nonetheless have that do more than just, you know, one thing.
How about some of the major keynotes? What did you think of some of the announcements Microsoft made?
Well, you know, I thought one of the most significant takeaways, and I'll be honest, I didn't see the keynote. I heard it summarized, and I heard scuttlebutt and commentary from other people. I was unfortunately scheduled all my briefings wall to wall, and so I didn't see any of the keynotes, which is a shame. But I did hear about them. I did have the opportunity to see some of the material that was in the keynote before the actual presentation, and I think for Microsoft. You know, there are a lot of familiar themes that they return to. I know in this year they were talking a lot more about authentication and the value it brings to enterprises. They've made some acquisitions in the area of smart card management, and they've been doing quite a bit of work on CardSpace, for instance, which is a end user based authentication standard. I think from Microsoft, from that speech, and I was talking with another analyst from a different firm about this, and he thought, and I agree, that the interoperability that Microsoft announced between OpenID and CardSpace is actually going to be quite big. And I think, you know, just stepping aside from the whole Microsoft keynote itself, when you think about authentication standards, there's been a lot of energy in the last couple of years developing alternatives to the traditional inside the four walls and single sign-on. So Liberty, CardSpace, and then you see, you know, in the open source world, OpenID and Yattice and some of these others. The two worlds haven't met that often. SAML, I forgot to mention SAML. The two worlds haven't met. You know, there's this idea that there are these enterprise architects who design authentication systems, and they, you know, they sit down with these big, thick manuals with all sorts of web service standards in them, and they, you know, hash them out, and they make them so convoluted that few people can really understand them. And then you've got these real simple things like OpenID, which are basically like you have a URL and this is your identity. And if you can prove you own the URL, then you're authenticated. Now, it's not quite that simple, but it's definitely two prevailing styles. And it's almost like the difference between scripters and coders. You know, there's two different classes of people that write applications. There's people that use like PHP and Ruby, and then there are other people who do Java and .NET and things like that. And they're two different worlds, two different classes of buyer, two different styles. The energy is clearly on the open source side, so it was really nice to see Gates and Microsoft, you know, at least acknowledge, if not somewhat embrace, that side of things.
Was that surprising to you?
Not surprising per se. I mean, leaving the open source, you know, and the fact that it's always been a little problematic for Microsoft aside for a second, I am a little surprised in the sense that they've been pushing real hard on their own standards. All of it, you know, they've been a key member of the WSI, and so, you know, it's nice to see that they're recognizing there are a lot of different paths to get us to where we want to go. And so that's my takeaway. I'm not sure I'm surprised. I'm pleased more than anything.
Switching gears to your contributions to the open source community, what did you contribute?
I'm kind of a closet programmer. I did a lot of computer science in high school, and so you know, we had a great computer science program. I didn't do any of that in college, mostly because I wanted to do the liberal arts thing and get myself educated, you know. So I kind of set that aside. But after college, I did stay with it. I made a decision about 5 years ago that I wanted to learn Java, so I did, and I wound up just contributing to a bunch of things. There's project management tool called Maven that I wrote a few little bits and pieces of, but the main thing that I do is there's a wiki project, and I believe in wikis as knowledge sharing. You know, I think they're foundation tools for what our information economy is being built on now as we speak. And so this project called JSP Wiki, which is a Java based tool that that I'm a co-author of. I didn't like the security in it, and so I kind of looked at it and I thought, well, I can rewrite this. And so, you know, I sort of sat down, and a month later, after furious bouts of code and 30,000 lines later, you know, we had a security system. And so I've been with it for doing that for a couple of years now, and it's fun. It's tiring. It's not my day job, you know, it's one of those things that you do, as weird as it may seem, to relax a little bit.
Talk a little bit about open source security tools. In terms of their use by enterprises, has there been an uptick in the amount of usage? I know, you know, the one thing that comes to mind immediately is Snort.
Well, open source has been critical for security, and it's embedded in everything we do. You know, for instance, if you run Apache and you use an SSL certificate on it, you're using an open source security product, right? Because OpenSSL was a community initiative. If you're using SSH, assuming you don't actually buy it from SSH Corporation and you use the tools that you can download, again, you're using a very secure, well done, you know, very well supported open source project. If you look at Mod Security, the assets have been purchased by a commercial corporation, but if you're using that as a web app firewall, you're using open source. So there's a lot of vibrancy there. I think, you know, open source in many ways is a lot like a science project, you know, or maybe to put it a different way, it usually scratches an itch that a particular person or small group of people has. Sometimes that itch is also shared by others, and if that's the case, it becomes accepted and popular. And to me, It's like the old Mao Zedong's proverb: "Let 10,000 flowers bloom." And not all of them are going to grow up to be, you know, giant beanstalks or sunflower seeds or sunflowers or whatever. But some of them are, and so I think there's a lot of fertility and a lot of creativity there. And frankly, if we waited for commercial software companies to write all the security stuff we need, we'd be waiting a long time. So,
I wanted to talk a little bit about market consolidation with you. We've seen a lot of that. Obviously, in the business software market, what do you advise clients in terms of going with a one or two vendor approach or taking a best of breed approach?
Well, the pendulum between suites and best of breed keeps swinging back and forth. We went through a period in the mid '90s where it was towards suites, and then it swung back towards best of breed, and then in some cases it swung back towards suite again. I think certain areas, suites make a lot of sense. Client-side protections, it is increasingly trending towards suites. So there's on the desktop, there's been so many agents fighting for control of it. It's kind of like that scene in The Matrix with the 200 Agent Smiths. You know, it's just a lot going on, all trying to control the same real estate, all, you know, burrowing like a dog for a bone, getting lower and lower and closer to the kernel. And, of course, you can't all be that close to the kernel because you just start blue-screening this thing. So we're seeing consolidation. You know, the sweet spot seems to be anti-malware of some kind, so antivirus, anti-spyware, some form of host intrusion prevention, broadly defined as behavior blocking and firewall, a configuration management component that includes, in many cases, patching, certainly includes configuration management and lockdown, NAC and NAP-ish, you know, network access and zoning kind of products seem to have a place in that consolidated agent, consolidated desktop.
There hasn't really been any major movement in terms of projects to date, right?
No. I mean, the enterprise adoption of that in particular is kind of hasn't met expectations. But it's more of a I view it as a feature, not a product. Certainly on the client side, NAC is a feature. It's not a, you know, you're not going to make a lot of money going into that client market. Now, servers and gateways and things like that, that's a different story. So back to your original question, best of breed or suite. Suites make sense, like I mentioned, on the client side. I think they make less sense when you've got a wide variety of threats you're trying to control. Certainly on the threat management side, there isn't enough combined excellence, I think, in all of the suites. Where it makes a lot of sense, but certainly there's a cost benefit basis to, you know, there's other reasons why you would do suites or even just consolidate your purchasing, right? You can consolidate purchasing with a single vendor without actually having to buy a suite. So, you know, that's the other approach to take too, is not, maybe not think about suites, but think about how many people do you want to do business with, and is fewer better than more? Most people would say so. And in that case, you know, who's got the best collection of things, whether or not they're integrated?
Let's talk a little bit about your book. security metrics replacing fear, uncertainty, and doubt. We've heard that companies often have a hard time measuring certain IT projects. Is that the same in security? I mean, is it any different?
Yeah, I mean, security is one of those professions where victories are typically of the quiet variety, and so it's a lot like two analogies. Security, you know, if you want to be in information security, it's almost a lot like working for the CIA, right? Because you can't tell people when you win. In fact, in many cases, you don't necessarily know when you win, but your failures are all very public, right? So, so you have to have that kind of personality to in order to thrive in that environment. And the second thing is, you know, security in a lot of ways related to this. Security is kind of when nothing happens, you've had a good day, right? And so the challenge in the measurement world has been trying to sort of show that you actually did have a good day when, in fact, if nothing happened, it was a good day. So it's really – you're trying to put numbers around essentially nothing. I like to think of it as the Seinfeld – you know, it's sort of the Seinfeld of security is what metrics are all about. You're trying to put some texture and depth on the key performance indicators and to peel back the onion past the point where you acknowledge that nothing happened today and to really get into the diagnostics of how your enterprise operations are performing, what kind of security features you've been able to roll out, how effective your programs are, what kind of spending you've been able to do and where, cross-sectionally, what are different divisions doing, how are they performing. You know, these are the things that allow you to get some texture and depth into what is fundamentally a pretty hard problem. And I think the challenge we've had as you know, as an industry, is we've tended to be very distracted by the bright and shiny objects of security, which is to say, you know, threat kind of stuff. But internal process efficiency and effectiveness has received a lot less attention. I think that's where we need to go next, and that's really what I try to talk about in my book.
Do security pros often have trouble stating a business case? And I guess IT pros in general, if they have to go up to upper management, it's difficult to state a business case and actually quantify with numbers, hard numbers.
Yeah, I think that's true. In many ways, it's because security is so esoteric that it's really hard to express anything that you see in a way that management will even sort of get, right? So I saw a great talk this morning. I sort of had a slight hand in putting it together, but it was on balanced scorecard and information security. And one of the fellows there on the panel is Paul Niven, is an author of about four books on – maybe it's three books on balanced scorecard, and he's building it off of some work done by a number of researchers at Harvard in the mid-'80s, and it was pretty cool. So basically, he pointed out that there's a lot of ways that you can measure things. There's financial, there's internal process, there's employee learning and growth, and there's customer-facing. And he advises that you divide up the measures of your success into those four quadrants. And for security, I actually think that if you do the same thing, that you try and bucket your key measures into those areas and try to, you know, pick four or five in each, you can get a really balanced view of where your program is headed. That, I think, speaks a lot more to the corner office rather than, you know, a particular, you know, number of there's a product I know where one of their quote-unquote dashboards has this three-dimensional graph that has a pie chart that shows the number of compliance violations or the percent. You know, what does that mean? I don't really know.
You mentioned good and bad metrics in your book. Can you talk a little bit about what's the difference?
Sure. Good metrics have a unit of measure associated with them. So it's a number of something or a percentage of something. They count something as opposed to being ordinal, you know, first, second, third, fourth, fifth. I mean, that's an ordinal measure. Cardinal measure is 1, 15, 25, you know, 1,480. Good metrics also are repeatable in a sense if you gave where you have a methodology where if you gave the same task to different people and you had them do the same thing, they would come up with the same result. So being objective and with very clear a very clear methodology is real important. So those are what good metrics are.
And that ends this edition of Security Wire Weekly. The latest information security news is always available as it breaks on our news page at certsecurity.com/news. And you can always catch our Security Wire Weekly podcast featuring interviews with security professionals at certsecurity.com/podcast. For now, I'm Rob Westervelt. Have a great day.